when someone says, I mean, an ETF or I bought an ETF, what exactly do they mean?
The ETF is a basket that contains various types of investments inside it. Key difference to other collective type of investment types is that this basket is listed on a securities exchange.
So what other advantages beyond that should I be looking at as an investor in choosing, let me go the ETF instead of buying 10 different stocks of companies across the world or across the market?
Broader pool of opportunities is one. The threshold, again, is a critical benefit that ETFs have. Imagine if you had to buy 1,000 stocks. What kind of capital do you need in order for you to, you know, hold that position?
Let's call this our household ETF. So you might have your cooking oil, you might have your bread. How do you achieve the price? Is it apportioning each, maybe trying to average out the prices of whatever the investment is, or how exactly is this price arrived at?
The bid and ask price must be determined somewhere, and that is the primary market of where ETFs are issued.
What has stopped us from having a local ETF, say all our stocks of all our eggs, if I might call them so, are put in this basket where I'm able to have exposure to everything? Hi, welcome to another episode of Make Money the Podcast, the show where we not only tell you, but also show you what's happening to your money and what could happen. And happy to introduce the conversation for this week. Now, it's always said, do not put all your eggs into one basket. And what this implies mostly is then put your eggs in different baskets. But what if you could have your eggs in different baskets without necessarily having to buy newer baskets? And in comes exchange-traded funds, which are an investment that works by allowing you to make a single investment, but the same is distributed across a number of, say, shares, commodities, or even currencies for some specific exchange-traded funds. But to just understand what exactly exchange-traded funds are and what they do within an investment portfolio, I'm happy to have our guest for this week. He's a portfolio manager with ICA Lion Asset Management, ILAM, Mr. Richard Mureithi. Mr. Richard, thank you.
Thank you
for
Kefa.
Being on the podcast. And I think I was just trying to set some context. You know, you try not to put your eggs in one basket. Then if you can't buy more baskets, then there's always the choice of still having your eggs in one basket, but in a sense, in different baskets. So let's try to define, first of all, what exchange-traded funds are. We have some listed here at our Nairobi Securities Exchange. That is the new gold, Absa New Gold ETF, that we had a conversation a few weeks ago with Mr. Tito Namu, a trader there. And, of course, we have the MSCI Satrix World Feeder Index, which allows you to invest into over 1,000 listed companies in developed markets. So, Mr. Mureithi, allowing you to jump in here, yes. How would you define an exchange-traded fund? I know once you say ETF, it just appears a sophisticated conversation or a sophisticated term that you are presenting. When someone says, I'm in an ETF or I bought an ETF, what exactly do they mean?
So you're right when you say the ETF is a basket. So it's a basket that contains various types of investments inside it. So you go to the supermarket and you want to buy some shares, you want to buy some bonds, you could buy some currencies. All these are put into one container, and that basket is what you buy. So you don't have to buy the underlying ones. And you rightly say the Satrix one has over 1,000 investments inside this basket called the ETF. Key difference to other collective type of investment types is that this basket is listed on a securities exchange. So that basket then will reflect the prices of what is inside.
For someone, and sticking to the same in terms of differentiation, for someone who might have heard a lot of terms that might look similar to ETF, so someone might hear the word mutual fund.
Yes.
Someone else might hear an index fund. And, you know, there are other type of funds, there are even equity funds, which I believe we've had a conversation, you know, not on Make Money, but elsewhere on equity funds.
Yeah, yes.
How do you differentiate all these type of funds from, say, an exchange-traded fund?
Let's look at the investor who's considering all these options. And I think you'd want to know what are the underlying investments that this basket has? What is actually inside this basket? So an exchange-traded fund is able to disclose to you its contents much more regularly. So it could be daily. That's a standard in some of the markets. The likes of a mutual fund, would disclose this much more periodically. So there's a monthly fact sheet that, you know, that would go out. The equity fund will tell you these are the investments that are underlying this investment basket. There is a strategy that an exchange-traded fund would pursue, and that is largely a passive investment. Once the arranger of the ETF creates it, its strategy is fixed. So it's a very passive investment. You know exactly what the underlying theme is. The ABSA theme is gold investment. Satrix is a MSCI World. The mutual fund, such as an equity fund, would have a much more active type of investment strategy. So there's a parameter of passive versus active. So suppose you're comfortable now with the underlying investments, you're comfortable with the strategy, and you now go forward to make the investment. The investment, minimum investment size, will also be a parameter to differentiate these. The exchange-traded fund today here in Nairobi, you can buy one share of the same. So take example of the ETF for the gold ETF, then one share of the same is about 1,200 shillings. In the case of index funds, mutual funds, equity funds, those will vary with the manager. So the manager will dictate the threshold you need to surpass in order for you to be eligible to invest. In our case, we lowered that threshold to 500 shillings as ICA Lion, and that will be the minimum investment for, say, our investment in our money market products. Once you're in, you would want to know, what's the value of the investments that I have? So the pricing of your investment is one that you can access in an ETF every second of the day throughout the trading day, because it is listed on a securities exchange. In the case of mutual funds, index funds, equity funds, those are priced at the end of the day, and you get a price that is linked to the net asset value. You can think of an ETF like hailing an Uber. Mm-hmm. The price is going to vary depending on where you are, depending on how far you go. It's a dynamic price. In the case of a mutual fund, the price is just at the end of the day. You get one price, which has been computed. In the case of ETFs, there is a cost component to investment products. ETFs have been celebrated to being very affordable, offering you diversification at a price point that is quite competitive. The price, of course, will depend on the type of underlying assets, but we have ETFs around the world today that have an annual cost of 3 basis points. To put that into context, if you invested 100,000 shillings in this, then the cost to you per year of holding this investment would be 30 shillings. Equity funds are much more expensive because it's active. There's much more decision-making that goes into it, and you can see those going upwards of even up to 5%. So the cost structure is also a consideration in the same. Here, we don't have gains that are taxed. Capital gains tax are not something that we incur. But in other jurisdictions, ETFs have a very favorable tax component to the same. The distributions are made in kind, and therefore, you don't incur, you know, any cash return that would trigger a taxation to it.
Let's delve a bit more into the pricing. And I made the example of thinking about eggs in one basket or eggs in a bit of different baskets. You made a better example here, I might say, on going to the supermarket, and let's call this our household ETF. So you might have your cooking oil, you might have your bread, you might have your salt in there, you might have your maize flour.
Yes.
In terms of pricing, what will sort of determine the price? Because you're having quite a number of commodities in there, a number of stocks or a number of items in there. How do you achieve the price? Is it apportioning each, maybe trying to average out the prices of whatever the investment is, or how exactly is this price arrived at?
The ecosystem of exchange-traded funds has several actors, and there's a primary market, which really consists of institutional type of actors, and there's a secondary market. So you and I, when we buy the ETF, we are players in the secondary market. There's a price which is available to us, a bid price and a ask price. The bid and ask price must be determined somewhere, and that is the primary market of where ETFs are issued. So ETFs have what are called authorized participants. And the authorized participant now is one who will be troubled with assessing the prices of these underlying investments. And should the price in the secondary market differ so greatly from the underlying, then the authorized participant would act accordingly. The bid and ask spread should be as narrow as possible, and therefore the authorized participant essentially makes a market to buy the underlying or release more of the underlying that the market price that you and I participate in is as close as possible to the same. So there's infrastructure for ETFs that is, you know, we are, it's opaque to us, but it exists. In the case of ABSA, the authorized participant is themselves. So they will bridge those bid ask spreads to make sure that it's tight.
Let's turn again to now the advantage, the comparative advantage. I think the most obvious one where I don't need to ask you and you can only add to it is the advantage you are provided in investing through an ETF is that you can have exposure to a little bit of everything without necessarily having to go out and seek each and every individual item. What are the advantages? I think you mentioned the costing structure, the ownership structure that is quite cheap. You also did mention for us the tax, you know, we don't have capital gains here for the Nairobi Securities Exchange, which we are lucky and we hope the finance bill is coming along the finance bill 2026 is not so far out and we hope that capital gains on Nairobi Securities Exchange listed instruments remains zero. So what other advantages beyond that should I be looking at as an investor in choosing, let me go the ETF instead of buying 10 different stocks of companies across the world or across the market?
Yeah, certainly access to a broader pool of opportunities is one. And I mean, if we to develop that a little bit, the themes, investment themes that are available to you via ETFs are varied. I've seen some very interesting ones out there. You know, there's an ETF listed and its ticker symbol is JETS. So that is an ETF that is purely airline stock. So if your, you know, understanding and your conviction of airlines is strong, you can express it entirely through that. There is one called PAWZ, P-A-W-Z, and that is purely on pets. So pet food, animal care services, etc. There's even one for, you know, weight loss. So yeah. It's
the underlying
Ozempic and Wegovy and the likes. So you're permitted as an investor to express your conviction and concentrate your bets there, and furthermore in a diversified pool of the same. The threshold again is a critical benefit that ETFs have. Imagine if you had to buy 1,000 stocks. What kind of capital do you need in order for you to, you know, hold that, hold that position? And of course, let's not forget the cost. The cost is critical. If you're paying 30 basis points, 0.03% of your
30 shillings of 100,000 shillings.
100,000 shillings. That's significant. If you're paying 5% on your capital, then that would be significantly much more. It's a dent on your return. That must be paid off from somewhere.
So we just have two listed exchange traded funds here in Nairobi, and like we mentioned, the new gold ABSA ETF, which is gives you exposure to gold, and of course the Satrix MCSI World Fielder Index, which gives you exposure to quite a number of 1,000 stocks in 23 developed markets. They are just two, Mr. Mureithi, and you know, we have what, over 60 listed companies. What would it take to grow this asset class from the niche that it is today to a point where we could have quite a number of ETFs listed in this market and even more participation and even more knowledge among the investor base, where, you know, you're not having to do an ETF 101 class and you are more maybe engaging on maybe other specific aspects within the ETF world? What will it take to get us there?
Well, I think everything begins with intent, and the NSE's strategy that's running up to 2029 now explicitly puts that intent forward as there'll be 50, you know, new listings. There will be 9 million retail investors. So the intent, the strategic intent and the direction that we're going is not ambiguous. So I think that's a critical thing as we aspire to see more ETFs in the market. The infrastructure for ETFs also needs to be in place. So we need actors like, you know, market makers. And that the legislation is in place, but not actively being pursued. I think the same is one that just has to take time to mature. That said, there is also existing evidence that we are moving in the right direction. You know, ZD Trader today bringing the retail market access to the securities exchange from their mobile phones. That's critical. That divisibility of trading to be one share from 100 shares. Those are big steps towards a deeper market. Liquidity is a constraint that will be a key factor in the success of exchange-traded funds. In Johannesburg, there are 85 ETFs. We have two here, and they're actually cross-listed from that market. Mm-hmm. There's one that was delisted on account of liquidity. The underlying securities were illiquid. It was a Pan-African ETF. So liquidity is very important, and the actors in the market are institutional and retail. There's work being done on the retail side. We as institutional investors are always ready to embrace market innovation. The growth of the market, I think, just has to take time, and the building blocks are already in place. The regulation for ETFs is currently housed under the CIS regulations, and there's a policy note that is linked to that. So I think as, you know, demand for the same comes up, then we would see more and more specific legislation that is linked to ETFs. In our case, like as institutional investors, the categorization of ETFs would be seen as a listed instrument. It doesn't pay regard to what are the underlying investments. So is it an equity? Is it listed? Okay, it's listed. Is it therefore an equity? But the underlying investments are, you know, bonds.
Yeah.
So I'm buying an ETF, a bond ETF. So what's my real exposure?
Yeah.
It's to bonds. It's just bonds which are listed in an ETF. So the fine-tuning of that is part of the progress that we would need to make.
Of our two ETFs, Mr. Murevi, both are cross-listings from South Africa, meaning they originated from South Africa, they're not even from here.
Yeah.
Now, once you take a look at our market, we have over 60 listed companies. We have banks. We even have a banking index that can tell you how banks themselves are performing. We have an all-share index that will give you a sense of where the market is. And not so long ago, we were talking of the 4.4% rise of the NSE through the first quarter. What has stopped us from having a local ETF, say, all our stocks, of all our eggs, if I might call them so, are put in this basket where I'm able to have exposure to everything, or say the listed banks, which are around 9 or 10, if you add the cross-listing from Kigali here, the Bank of Kigali. So you have around 10 banks also in an index that gives you a sense of how banks themselves are doing. But what we lack is a local ETF.
Yeah.
What will it take? And further to the question is, who actually is supposed to come up with this ETF and list it so that, you know, today someone can say, hey, Kefa, I will go and I think I'll invest in Kenyan banks and I'll do that through an ETF. I will not go and start picking KCB, Equity, INM, and the rest of them. What will it take to get us there? And who is supposed to be in charge of this?
Well, I think the ETF landscape has opportunities, and part of the opportunity set is for the arranger. So the arranger of the ETF, and the arranger must look at the economics of, you know, establishing this ETF. The cost involved in designing an ETF, listing it, monitoring it, operating it, and those are fixed costs. So if you have a big scale, then those fixed costs can be spread over more assets. I would look at an issuer of an ETF who look and say, if the asset pool that would be interested in this was, say, 10 million shillings, that's very different from an asset pool of, say, 100 million shillings. So scale of AUM that, or assets under management that this can attract will dictate how quickly you see a creation of the same. There is, of course, a part to play by the NSE. Say, to create an all-share index, the sponsor of the same would would need to be the NSE, and I'll cite the partnerships that we've seen in other exchanges around the world with the securities exchange partnering up with an asset manager, because there must be capital that will support market making. So those partnerships have to crystallize somewhere along there for you to see an increase in the same. In a smaller way, there's a concentration of equities. Market weight of Safaricom at some times has gone up to 50%. So if you're buying the ETF that is premised on the all-share index, then you're really taking a really leveraged bet on a single entity. How do we cure for this? We see, you know, more listed entities of bigger sizes dilute the same, and over time, that becomes less of an issue.
You did mention a few things as we move towards the conclusion, and one is the need for regulation, and what you mentioned is there's a need to create maybe specific regulations towards exchange-traded funds, noting that they are piled up with collective investment schemes, or CISs, which are your money market funds, your equity funds, and your bond funds. And you also did mention that the strategy, and this is the 2025 to 2029 strategy by the Nairobi Securities Exchange, which I believe wants to bring about 50 listed funds by the end of that period. So going forward, then, for my last question here is, what's the outlook for this ETF space? There's quite the encouragement that at least we do have some regulation. They might sit in a pack with many others, but there's an allowance for that to come through. And we have an exchange, Nairobi Securities Exchange, that's pushing. We have the two listed ETFs, and I believe we here at the Business Daily we've learned of, you know, that listing of fund specific that's trying to put their portfolio companies is the Africa Eats, which is supposed to be our next ETF. Looking out to the end of the strategy, I was thinking, do you say short to medium term? But let's actually look at it towards the end of the NSE strategy in 2029. What do you think the space will look like then?
Well, I think the two actors already in the market have come from South Africa. If they're attracting meaningful flows in terms of assets, then they'll definitely attract their peers down south. So you'd expect to see more names, OneInvest or CoreShares, come into the market. The, you know, pioneers or the pilots have already laid the groundwork. So the subsequent entrants will have a much smoother experience of the same. I expect to see, you know, more and more interest in our capital markets, translating to also demand for the products. The NSE is actually quite alive to the need for, you know, starring the market. So we have securities, lending, and borrowing, which is already in place. That is to be taken up some more, and that expressing of conviction of, you know, to buy or to short sell, was something that I expect to see more and more of going into the end of that strategy period. There are, of course, constraints and bottlenecks the same. I think foreign investor outflows is one that would constrain this outlook. We need currency to be very stable. Currency weakness, that is our volatile currency, is one that would really discourage participation of the same.
So, Mr. Richard, thanks a lot for being on the podcast and giving us what I would think is a 101 masterclass on exchange traded funds.
Thank you.
Mr. Richard Murith is a portfolio manager at ICA Lion Asset Management, so this is ILAM, and he's been on our podcast, and I hope you've gotten to learn one or two things around exchange traded funds, what they are and what they could become for our market right here. And that has been another episode of Make Money, the podcast by The Business Daily. My name is Kefa Mwirori, and as always, until I catch you on the next episode, do remember to make your money work for you. Goodbye.